Hello and welcome to What Does the Bible Say? I'm your host, Dr. Wayne Davis of Creekside Messianic Fellowship in Jasper, Georgia. I believe with all my heart that we're quickly approaching the day of the Lord, the time when our Messiah Yeshua is going to blow that trumpet and call us all home. I want to spend the next few weeks looking at the book of John, because I think the Gospel of John has a lot to say to help us be ready for the time when that trumpet does blow. So when the Jews went out of the synagogue, the Gentiles begged that these words might be preached to them the next Sabbath. I'll always remember hearing a radio preacher talking about this chapter, and he said, by the next Sabbath, surely they meant Sunday, because you don't believe that the Gentiles would ever have worshipped on Shabbat, do you? To which I said, I can read. It says the next Sabbath. It goes on to say, now when the congregation had broken up, many of the Jews and devout proselytes, they're Gentiles, followed Paul and Barnabas, who, speaking to them, persuaded them to continue in the grace of God. On the next Sabbath, almost the whole city came together to hear the word of God. Back to John chapter 18. So in verse 20, Yeshua says, I spoke openly to the world. I always taught in synagogues and in the temple where the Jews always meet, and in secret I have said nothing. What he's saying is, you can call any number of witnesses. And the scripture says what? On the testimony of two or more, let all things be established. You find that in Deuteronomy chapter 17, verse 6, and Deuteronomy 19. Verse 21, why do you ask me? Ask those who have heard me what I said to them. Indeed, they know what I said. And when he said these things, one of the officers who stood by struck Yeshua with the palm of his hand, saying, do you answer the high priest like that? Yeshua answered him, if I have spoken evil, bear witness of the evil. But if well, why do you strike me? In other words, what he said was entirely in accordance with Jewish law. A person was not asked to explain themselves. Rather, you called witnesses and let the witnesses present the evidence against the accused. So he was just saying, we should follow our own laws. Was it legal to have a trial at night? No. I mean, they violate so many of the commandments, even their man-made rules and regulations here. It's really sad. Then Annas sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest. And John doesn't describe the trial before Caiaphas. He didn't think it was important, so let's press on. What is important to John right here is Peter's three denials of Messiah. That's very important to John. And I'll either tell you later tonight or next week why it was so important. Verse 25. Now Simon Peter stood and warmed himself. So where is he? He's still by the charcoal fire. Therefore they said to him, you are not also one of his disciples, are you? He denied it and said, I am not. One of the servants of the high priest, a relative of him whose ear Peter cut off, said, did I not see you in the garden with him? Peter then denied again, and immediately a rooster crowed. I shouldn't keep telling you about these things I read in the commentaries, but I read a lot of commentaries before I ever start teaching. I like to see all kinds of points of view. One of them today said John only describes one of Peter's three denials. I count three, don't you? One, two, three. I have to put numbers in there. Okay. Peter then denied again. Immediately a rooster crowed. Then they led Yeshua from Caiaphas to the Praetorium. The Praetorium is on the Temple Mount. It's on the north end of the Temple Mount. The Praetorium was the Roman garrison, and it was built up high enough that the Romans could look over the walls of the temple and see what was going on in the temple. Because the people would riot if the Roman soldiers ever walked into the temple. So They were content just to stand up at the top of the auditorium and watch what went on to make sure there was nothing untoward taking place. It says, and it was early morning. What do they mean by early morning? They mean early morning. Remember, Messiah's had two trials already, one before Annas and one before Caiaphas. And the sun's just now coming up, and they bring him to the Romans. It says early morning, but they themselves did not go into the praetorium. Why? Lest they should be defiled, but that they might eat the Passover. Remember from Acts chapter 10, verse 28, there's a rabbinic tradition. If they go into this house where the Gentiles are, they'll become unclean, and they won't get to eat the Passover Seder. So they're plotting to murder the only begotten Son of God and think that they're right with God and want to take part in the Passover Seder. Do you see what's wrong with them? Where is their heart? Their heart is far from God. So it's sheer hypocrisy. But it also tells you that this trial in the Praetorium takes place on what's still the 14th day of the first month, the day we call Passover, because the Passover Seder is eaten as the sun goes down on the 14th and it becomes the 15th. So the chronology is, as the sun went down on the 13th, Messiah ate the Passover Seder with his disciples a day early, then went out to the Garden of Gethsemane out of the Mount of Olives, was arrested, was tried by Annas, then was tried before Caiaphas, and then is taken to Pilate to be tried about sunup. Because remember, he's nailed to the cross about 9 a.m. So it's really early in the morning on the 14th of the first month, the month of Aviv or Nisan in the Jewish calendar. Verse 29, Pilate then went out to them and said, what accusation do you bring against this man? Why does he ask that? Normally they would have brought a long list of charges all written out and sealed and stamped and signed. They haven't had time to draw anything up. They were up all night trying to get something with which to charge him. So they didn't bring a bill. And let's turn up to Matthew chapter 20 for a moment, verses 17 to 19, because it's going to play into some of the events that take place before Pilate. Matthew chapter 20, verses 17 to 19. It says, now Yeshua, going up to Jerusalem, took the 12 disciples aside on the road and said to them, so he's going up for Passover, they've not yet had the Seder, and he tells them, behold, we are going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be betrayed to the chief priests and to the scribes. Who betrayed him? Judas. To the chief priests. Why doesn't it say the high priest? Because there's many of them. So there's Annas and Caiaphas, the chief priests, and to the scribes, and they will condemn him to death. And what? And deliver him to the Gentiles to mock and to scourge and to crucify. In the third day he will rise again. That's what he meant when he said he knew what was going to happen. He told them ahead of times that he was going to get tried by Annas and Caiaphas, then turned over to the Romans. Yet he went up to Jerusalem anyway. Because they didn't bring any accusations written out, a bill of indictment, in verse 30, it says in John 18, verse 30, they answered and said to him, that is to Pilate, if he, Yeshua, were not an evildoer, we would not have delivered him up to you. That's not an answer. Their answer was, we don't have any charges, just trust us, he's a bad guy. Then Pilate said to them, you take him and judge him according to your law. What's Pilate supposed to do? Rome has laws. Before you execute somebody, you're supposed to have a trial. And you can't have a trial if you don't know what the charges are. So you take him and do what you want with him. Therefore the Jews said to him, it is not lawful for us to put anyone to death. Wait a minute. Don't they stone Stephen? Indeed. Weren't they going to stone the woman caught in adultery? What do they mean it's not lawful for us to put anyone to death? Are they lying? The answer is no, they're not. by Jewish law, in order for them to sentence someone to death, the Sanhedrin must meet in what's called the Chamber of the Hewn Stone. It's a particular room on the Temple Mount. And they've got to meet there and seek God's guidance and God's judgment as they're handing forth the death sentence. In protest to Rome, at the time of Messiah's death, they had left the Chamber of Hewn Stone and refused to meet there in protest to Rome. So at this point in time, they don't have the authority under Jewish law to put anyone to death. So they must come to the Romans. Verse 32, that the saying of Yeshua might be fulfilled, which he spoke, signifying by what death he would die. Meaning, if the Jews had sentenced him to death and carried it out, they would have stoned him. But he said he would be crucified in Matthew chapter 20, verses 17 to 19. Why did he think he would be crucified? Well, he knew. But also remember, David, 1,000 years earlier, had written in Psalm 22, they pierced my hands and my feet. So for 1,000 years before the birth of Messiah, everyone should have known he was going to die by crucifixion. So it just happened for this short period of time that the Jews refused to meet in the Chamber of Hewn Stone and couldn't hand out a death sentence of stoning. How did God know, huh? Verse 33, then Pilate entered the praetorium again, called Yeshua and said to him, are you the king of the Jews? See, he knew why they brought him. Yeshua answered him, are you speaking for yourself about this, or did others tell you this concerning me? What a probing question. Do you, Pilate, know that I am the King of Kings and Lord of Lords? Have you become a believer? Pilate answered, am I a Jew? Meaning, why would I even care if you're the King of the Jews? So no, Pilate is not a believer. He says, your own nation and the chief priests have delivered you to me. What have you done? Why does he ask Messiah, what have you done? Because the high priest couldn't tell him.
What'd you do to tick them off?
Yeah. What have you done? Yeshua answered, my kingdom is not of this world. Will he not establish a kingdom? The millennial kingdom, it'll reign for 1,000 years, yes, but not at the first coming. And his kingdom is not of this world. It's not the same character as this world. It is not a mortal, physical, competing world kingdom. Rather, when he comes as King of Kings and Lord of Lords, he's going to reign over the world, and it's going to be an entirely different kind of kingdom, not of this world, not under the reign of Satan. He says, if my kingdom were of this world, my servants would fight, so that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now, my kingdom is not from here. It will be, he says, but now it's not. So we know from Psalm 2 and Revelation 19 that the kingdom's going to come, but not for 2,000 years after this account with Pontius Pilate. Verse 37, Pilate therefore said to him, are you a king then? I'm sure it was with a lot of sarcasm. Because at this point, does Messiah look like a king? Is he rich? Is he dressed in royal robes with the finest fancy? No. He was a very humble man. Remember the scripture said, birds have nests and foxes have holes, but the Son of Man has not even anywhere to lay his head. He says, my kingdom were of this world, my servants would fight, so that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now my kingdom is not from here. Pilate therefore said to him, are you a king then? Yeshua answered, you say rightly that I am a king. What's that mean? He says, yes, I am. His kingdom's not of this world, but yes, he's a king. It says, for this cause I was born, and for this cause I came into the world, that I should bear witness to the truth. Everyone who's of the truth hears my voice. So everyone who is of the truth, that is in him, will know truly that he will have a kingdom. And it'll be a kingdom that will go from one end of the earth to the other, from pole to pole and shore to shore, as I like to say, which doesn't mean much except all around the world. Pilate said to him, what is truth? That kind of dodges the issue, doesn't it? Truth is standing before him, looking him in the face. What is truth? When he said this, he went out again to the Jews, said to them, I find no fault in him at all. Is Yeshua a threat to Caesar? No, his kingdom's not of this world. Has he been inciting people to rebel against Rome? Not at all. So Rome is not offended. So what does it mean? What does he want to do? He wants to release him. But those who brought him are going to have nothing of it. Verse 39, but you have a custom that I should be summoned to you at the Passover. Do you therefore want me to release to you the King of the Jews? Then they all cried again, saying, not this man, but Barabbas. Now Barabbas was a robber. What you got to know about Barabbas is his last name. It's Yeshua Bar Abba. Yeshua is salvation, Bar is son, Abba is father. So he offers the crowd Yeshua, the Son of God, and a false Messiah. The true Messiah and a false Messiah. And the crowd takes the false Messiah because they are not seeking God's kingdom, but rather they're doing the will of their father Satan, as Messiah pointed out to them. So in a picture, in type, in a teaching, they reject the true Messiah in favor of the false. John chapter 19. So then Pilate took Yeshua and scourged him. He said, the man has done nothing, but yet he scourges him. What does it mean to scourge? It means to whip him with a whip of leather straps with metal glass and bone embedded in the straps that just rips the flesh off the body, even sometimes tearing the organs out of the back. Many people died just from the scourging. And this he's doing to a man that he knows is innocent of any and all charges. He does this because he thinks it will appease the crowd. It says, and the soldiers twisted a crown of thorns and put it on his head, and they put on him a purple robe. And they said to him, Hail, King of the Jews! And they struck him with their hands. If you go to Jerusalem and go to the Praetorium down in the floor, you'll find that this wasn't just something unique to Messiah, but it was a game the Roman soldiers liked to play with condemned prisoners. They've actually kind of carved the instructions for the game in the floor of the Praetorium. But they're only allowed to play it with condemned prisoners because the prisoners often didn't survive the game. So they're treating Messiah like he's condemned to die, even though Pilate's already said he's not guilty of anything. Verse 4, Pilate then went out again and said to them, Behold, I'm bringing him out to you, that you may know that I find no fault in him. Meaning Pilate didn't find any reason. Just beat him half to death anyway. Then Yeshua came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, and Pilate said to them, Behold the man. That's why the place in the Praetorium is called Ecce Homo, means behold the man. He doesn't say, Behold the Son of God, behold the King, just behold the man. He's a bloody, beaten, broken mess at this point. And he wants the crowd to have some compassion and pity on him. None happens. Verse 6, therefore, when the chief priests and officers saw him, they cried out, saying, Crucify him, crucify him. Pilate said to them, You take him and crucify him, for I find no fault in him. Pilate wasn't a godly man. He wasn't a just man. He wasn't a kind man. But he's having pity on this broken, beaten man. He says, you take him if you want to. I'm not going to crucify him. Verse 7, the Jews answered him, We have a law. And according to our law, he must die because he made himself the Son of God. They understood the claim absolutely. Leviticus chapter 24, verse 16 says, The penalty for blasphemy is death by stoning. So they understood his claim. Verse 8, therefore when Pilate heard that saying, he was the more afraid. When he heard what saying?
Son of God.
Remember, Pilate's a Roman. Romans have all those pagan deities, including Hercules, who's supposed to be the son of Zeus and a mortal woman. So he's familiar with at least the pagan concept of God having a son. And if you turn back to Matthew chapter 27, we find something else has occurred that John didn't think was important to tell us because Matthew had already recorded it. Matthew 27:19. Verse 17 is where he offers the crowd Barabbas or Messiah. Verse 19 says, while he was sitting on the judgment seat, his wife sent to him, saying, have nothing to do with this just man, for I have suffered many things today in a dream because of him. So his wife is coming to him saying, wait a minute, I've been having dreams and visions about this man. This man is not just a man. And now the chief priests and the scribes say he's made himself to be the Son of God. And Pilate's thinking, don't know if he is, don't know if he's not, but hey, you know, I got things on my shelf back there like this. Best tread lightly. And went again into the praetorium and said to Yeshua, where are you from? But Yeshua gave him no answer. Remember Isaiah 59:7? Like a sheep being led to the slaughter is silent. Even so he opened not his mouth. Then Pilate said to him, are you not speaking to me? Do you not know that I have the power to crucify you and the power to release you? That brings a response. Yeshua answered, you could have no power at all against me unless it had been given you from above. Meaning God puts you in this position. He puts you in a position of leadership. He puts you here to preside over my case. Else there'd be nothing you could do to me. Says, therefore, the one who delivered me to you has the greater sin. Here the commentators fight. Is he talking about Caiaphas or Judas? I think probably both. Because Judas sold him out to Caiaphas, and Caiaphas sold him out to Rome. In Matthew 26:24, it tells us, referring to Judas Iscariot, would have been better if he'd not even been born. From then on, Pilate sought to release him. Why does Pilate seek to release him? He's afraid now. He's stuck. He's between a rock and a hard place. But the Jews cried out, saying, if you let this man go, you are not Caesar's friend. Whoever makes himself a king speaks against Caesar. That's a not too veiled threat, that if you let him go, we're going to send a letter to Caesar and say, here was a king bring himself in revolt against Rome, and you sided with him. You helped foment a rebellion against Caesar. And of course, that would cause Pontius Pilate to be a little shorter, at least a head shorter. Verse 13, when Pilate therefore heard that saying, that they were going to rat him out to Caesar, he brought Yeshua out, sat down in the judgment seat in a place that is called the pavement, but in Hebrew, Gabbatha. Now it was the preparation day of the Passover. The preparation day is the 14th day of the first month. It's called the preparation day because that's the day they kill the lamb and prepare the Passover Seder that they will have at sundown. And about the sixth hour, which we assume is Roman time because it's 9 a.m., and the Romans in the Jewish times were different. He said to the Jews, behold your king. But they cried out, away with him, away with him, crucify him. But Pilate said to them, shall I crucify your king? The chief priests answered, we have no king but Caesar. I'll tell you, Pontius Pilate's really between a rock and a hard place now. Do the chief priests mean we have no king but Caesar? Yeah, remember, they bought their offices from Caesar. They owe their wealth and their power and their positions to Caesar. Then he delivered him to them to be crucified. So they took Yeshua and led him away. And he, bearing his cross, remember how in Genesis 22 we read that Isaac had to carry his wood up to the top of Mount Moriah? To where he was to be sacrificed. Even so, Messiah had to bear his large piece of wood upon which he was going to be crucified. So he went out to a place called the place of a skull, which is called in Hebrew, Golgotha. Why is it called the place of a skull? It looks like a skull. Why does it look like a skull?
Caves opening into
yeah, you got eyes, you got what looks like a nose and mouth, but why does it look like that? Answer is, that's where they carved those huge stones
that they used to build the temple. So he is crucified at the place where they hewed the stones to build the temple. The stone which the builders rejected has become the chief cornerstone. It says, where they crucified him and two others with him, one on either side and Yeshua in the center. Now Pilate wrote a title and put it on the cross, and the writing was, Yeshua of Nazareth, the King of the Jews. After all that they had said, and after all his wife said, he may actually believe Yeshua is the King of the Jews, that he truly is the promised Messiah. But not enough to put his neck on the line. Verse 20, then many of the Jews read this title, for the place which Yeshua was crucified was near the city. It is. It's just outside the northern wall of the Temple Mount. Close enough that at the place of execution they could hear the Levitical choir singing the Psalms in the temple. So as Messiah dies, they're singing Psalm 118, which we read at the Passover Seder on Monday, and we'll read again tomorrow night. And it was written in Hebrew, Greek, and Latin. You know what my Liberty Bible commentary says? Commentary says they wrote it Aramaic, Greek, and Latin, right next to the verse where they say it was written in Hebrew, Greek, and Latin. I don't know. Sure says Hebrew to me. Therefore, the chief priests of the Jews said to Pilate, do not write the King of the Jews, but he said, I am the King of the Jews. Meaning, don't write it as a statement, write it as a claim. He claimed to be. And Pilate answered, what I have written, meaning it stays. We're not changing it. Then the soldiers, when they had crucified Yeshua, took his garments and made four parts, to each soldier a part, and also the tunic, which was the long robe. Now the tunic was without seam, woven from the top in one piece. They said therefore among themselves, let us not tear it, but cast lots for it, whose it shall be. That the scripture might be fulfilled, which says, they divided my garments among them, and for my clothing they cast lots. That's Psalm 22:18, which is the same psalm that David wrote 1,000 years before the birth of Messiah, that prophesied Messiah would die by crucifixion. So therefore the soldiers did these things. We didn't make it all the way through, but we'll pick up next week, Lord willing, in John chapter 19, verse 25. Just trust me on this, that after the crucifixion and the burial comes the resurrection.
Yes.
On which day?
First fruits.
The Feast of First Fruits of the Barley Harvest, which was on the day after the Sabbath during the week of Passover, and the year that Messiah died, he rode into Jerusalem on what we call Palm Sunday on the 10th of the month. He was crucified on the 14th, buried as the sun goes down. Then the 15th is the first day of unleavened bread, which was a high Sabbath. The 16th is the weekly Sabbath. And he arises the next morning, the 17th day of the first month, at the Feast of First Fruits. Feast of First Fruits is not always on the 17th day of the month, but it was that year. And that is the same day that Noah's Ark sat down on Mount Ararat, and Noah and his family were delivered from God's judgment. It's the day that Haman was hung in his own gallows and the Jews were delivered from his plot. It was the day that the children of Israel came through the Red Sea at the Exodus, being delivered from Pharaoh's Egypt. It's the same day that our Messiah Yeshua arises. More on that next week. Well, that's all the time we have for this week, folks. We'll come back to the book of John next week, Lord willing, if we're still here. But I do believe with all my heart that the Lord is coming soon. So I'd encourage you, if you've never been saved, if you've not given your life to God, I would encourage you to do it now. Salvation is by faith, not by works, lest any man should boast. If you don't know how to do that, then please give me a call or visit my website at www.john1415.org. May God bless you.